Awesome. What's going on? It's Mario, Final Approach, the F8 podcast. We're talking turkey today because we have finally entered the turkey market and there's lots going on. And I got close friends that know a thing or two about turkeys, and we'll introduce them right now. We'll go top left if you're looking at your screen. If you're watching, it's Brad Fenson, freelance writer, extraordinary chef, and animal slayer. What did I leave out, Brad, on that? Animal
Super nice
slayer was
guy.
pretty good. JJ.
You left out super nice guy.
Well, that's understood. So
Life has changed a bit. We used to be outdoor writers and photographers and stuff, but it's more like outdoor communicators now, with blogs and podcasts and what we're doing here. The game continually changes, and it's like the turkey industry. You're racing to keep up.
Yeah, there's so many more mediums that you have to kind of, chase, right? So, like you said, it's not just you're not just writing for a magazine anymore or a newspaper or, maybe some kids will say, "What's a newspaper?" and whatnot, but you know what I mean? Like those days are, I'm not saying they're over, but they've evolved and there's so many more mediums. So mediums. So that is Brad in your top left. On your bottom is our Federale, JJ Reich, who is, well, let's hear your title because first of all, you are a turkey connoisseur. And I mean that in a call sense and just the history and the
Well,
tradition.
yeah, I mean, I guess if someone had to tell me to pick my favorite thing to hunt, it would definitely be wild turkeys. But my official title is Senior Manager of Press Relations for Federal Ammunition, CCI, Spear, and Heavy Shot. However, I also do a little bit of writing myself, and I am the columnist for NWTF Turkey Call Magazine, and
Awesome.
which my next column is going to be about FA. So I've been working on that last couple of days. Pretty awesome. I'm
Well, we
pretty excited that you guys have turkey calls. That is awesome.
well, Brad, if you would have saw JJ in, so listen, I'm always too busy, right, to go to the call competition, right, with the custom calls and everything at the NWTF convention, right? So JJ's like, "Come on, we got to go. I got to show you a couple things and we're going." So he takes me over there. And he's like an 8-year-old on Christmas morning. He's like, "Look at this one. Look at this one. Oh, you got to blow this one. Oh my God, look at this." And he's like, "Okay, hurry up, get over here. Look at this." And he's like, and then all of a sudden he stops. He's like, "This is like the Holy Grail." And he's like, "This is when you graduate from like, just like a mouth call and a pot call and a slate and a freaking box call, like all of these." He's like, "This is it." And it's like, the sun
Yeah.
comes in and it's
The heavens
like,
are opening up.
oh yeah. So I don't think I've ever seen anybody more jacked. It's like me at like a decoy show where I don't know where to turn and what to do. That's JJ, and he's just jacked. The only thing that he's more jacked about, maybe, is black walnuts. Maybe.
Well, yeah, that's all true. That's all
So
true.
it was pretty cool, but there's and this is another thing that like I said, I don't get to go over there, and we'll go into a bunch of stuff, but just talking about this is there's so many other categories of calls that just a regular turkey hunter might not have an idea about. You know what I mean? There's all these different styles of calls that you don't normally see in the turkey woods. Right, JJ, because you have to be really accomplished or you have to be like a collector. It's not like duck and goose calls, like they all look the same, right? Some are obviously higher priced than others, and you'll see it and you'll be like, "Oh, that's a turkey call," or that's a goose call, like, okay, I get it, or that's a duck call. Like there's some awesome categories in that deal. So yeah.
Well, really, it kind of boiled down to necessity. I mean, the commercial turkey call market, I mean, it can be argued and debated, but it really didn't start until the 70s. Like, possibly a little bit in the 50s, but otherwise people who wanted to go turkey hunting and needed a call was like building their own. And because of that, there was so many different designs, because there's all these, you know, people in their barns and their workshops and trying to like make something that would make a turkey sound. And so because of that, there are a large variety of different turkey calls. You know, just to put it in perspective, when the NWTF has a turkey call making competition, there is 96 categories to enter a call in. So that's how many different, I mean, obviously there's decorative and other things.
Sure. Associated but there's a that. Lot. That's what I'm saying. There's a lot that people don't even know. Like, you know, like, okay, you know, there's your pot call, right? And it's like, yes. Yeah, there's all that. And then there's like, it goes way past that. It's insane. So, well, listen, I got the two guys that I definitely want to talk turkey with. So let's go over, like, you know, like say somebody is just getting into turkeys this season or wants to get better at it. You know, maybe there's some tips out of this where it's like, hey, maybe if you do this, you know, this is going to help you down the road, you know, get a turkey. My first thing is the weather. You know what I mean? The weather usually predicts what's going on. And what I mean by that, is it spring early and it's the start of the season? Or, you know, like last year we were fighting like snow in Montana, and like a couple weeks into the season, you're like, what are we doing? And I know, Brad, you were doing the same. It was like, and the turkeys were acting totally different. So weather definitely has something to do with it, for sure. So JJ, you're in Minnesota, so maybe you go first. And I mean, Brad, you're even more north than him, but you come down and hunt. So maybe let's start there and talk about that.
I actually want to hear Brad's opinion on this first.
Okay. Well, I can tell you it was fruity last year. Go ahead. Oh my God.
Weather can really change things, and it can really push back the nesting season. So I've been on some hunts where we ended up with 3 feet of snow on the ground, and it actually pushed birds back to their wintering roosts. You know, they recongregated and went back to where they'd spend the winter and went back there for a few weeks. So being adaptable and knowing your birds is number one. And I think that's the number one tip I would tell anyone, is to know turkeys, you need to spend some time with them and watch them. And especially if you're calling and talking to them, the best way to learn how to call is to listen to them. That could even be going to a turkey farm and listening to domestic birds in terms of all the little squeaks and things that they do, because, you know, hunters maybe know three or four different calls or notes or different things to do, but turkey language is very diverse, and being able to speak it and have those different communication skills is what's going to separate you from the average guy. So, you know, you get in close and little peeps and squeaks and things like that can make a big difference in terms of convincing birds to come in. And, you know, whether they're dealing with heavy snow or rain or different weather events, or it's prime breeding season, they talk every day. So learn more about the bird, pay attention to the noises they make, and then duplicate it. If you can't find them in the wild, spend some time with some domestic birds and listen to them, and it'll up your game overnight.
For sure. Well, and there's a ton of stuff online too that you could get to. And I would say, JJ, you can go next, but I'll add on to that. But what Brad's talking about is obviously practice in the off season. We always talk about that on the waterfowl side, right? But like, don't pull out your calls on like day one of the season, right? So practice. And also don't pigeonhole yourself into like just a slate call, or you're just going to use one mouth call. Like, go through your calls, try some new ones, and or whatever you have, and see what sounds make what. Because I know I have a mouth call that sounds like a really young hen, right? And then I have another mouth call that sounds just totally raspy and is that old like barking hen. But I know from, you know, just me in my area, that when the young hen's in the roost and she fires off and she says something like a couple jakes or whatever, gobble. But when that old raspy, you know, haggard hen is in the roost and she goes, the whole woods goes right. So that's the one she gets the response. So, you know your sounds and your pitch for sure. Go ahead, JJ.
Yeah, I mean, I just was going to echo on what Brad said. You know, I have some CDs I listen to in the car. I also have, you know, some MP3s, you know, and that in a lot of like the turkey call makers community and callers community, that's what they play on the radio when they're driving someplace, and they listen to it. You know, there's a lot of great recordings of turkeys that you can buy.
Sure.
And it's just wild turkeys making sounds. It's not a caller, it's the actual bird. And, you know, and a lot of the, it's all about practice. Practice makes perfect. So you got to practice your turkey calls. And these guys, if you really want to be good at it, you're practicing months ahead of time.
You're
practicing in your car with the mouth call. And yeah. These guys are running calls all the time. They have calls that they run, you know, just to practice with. And then those usually get worn out before the season, and then they crack open a new one. And that's, you know, and to your point, that's why you sell a 3-pack on your mouth calls, because it's like you want to try different things. And birds are birds, right? So the other day, there was a bunch of crows in our backyard, and my wife wanted me to call them just so she could, you know, just so that she could be surrounded by crows and look at them. It's just kind of fun to be with wildlife like that. And I pulled out one crow call and nothing happened. And I pulled another one, nothing happened. I pulled out the third one and they all came around. Like there was like 19 of them in my yard. Like, you know, so they really do depend on, birds are birds, and, you know, they'll react to different sounds, and it could be a crow call, but, or a turkey call, but it might not work. But another tone, pitch, volume, whatever might really, you know, spark them up and get them going. So you have to have variety too.
Well, it's definitely, you know, and listen, you guys are running off waterfowl too to know this. Like, you know, you could know your sounds, right? And you have the right sounds, you have the right pitch, whatever the case may be. But you got to know when to use that call, and then your cadence and how you deliver it. So there's a lot that goes into, like, let's just say, like Brad said, like reading the birds, like you're watching the birds and what they're doing, and you hit them with a certain call and they just, you know, they either hang up or they come, and you know, you got to do something else. So there's a lot that goes into that calling side, and there's a ton of information out there, but you really need to spend a good amount of time on that. Like I would say, you know, I would say probably your second thing. Your first thing is obviously scouting and finding them and finding the roost. And we can get into that. But then I think it's your calling and trying to get the birds, because they might not be able to see the decoys. Maybe you're in some timber and some other stuff. So so I'll go back to, definitely, I think one of the more important things is, you know, finding the roost and finding the birds and checking a property and see where they're going. Maybe they have a route when they definitely have a route when they come down the roost. Is it going to be the same the day you hunt them? So maybe let's talk about that, because I know I've roosted them and I've had both things happen. They walk right in front of us and we rock one, or they go the other way and you get the finger. So Brad, what about you?
Yeah, turkeys have a mind of their own, and you know, we often get out competed by the real thing. And you never know what you're competing with. Is it the hens? Is it a food source? Is it the wind? Was there a predator that showed up during the night? I mean, anything can derail your hunt. So paying attention to all the little details is important. I would say one of the things, if you're starting out or even if you're seasoned, is start a diary. Like birds can be very historical in terms of what they do from year to year, week to week. You know, where do they go when it's snowing? Is there a specific food source they try to key into? You can really learn something from what you observe in the field and taking notes and then putting it into practical use and experience in the field. So the things you see out there are important. The birds are doing it for a reason. And when you start to break it down and figure that stuff out, it really gives you an edge.
Yeah, I mean, just like you say that, like I remember, so when we had the bad weather in Montana and we were chasing them, a majority of the birds were like really heading towards like any kind of farm. Anybody that had any food out, they were struggling, and they were heading like right to Like they were in with the horses, in with the cows, in with the pigs. Like whoever
going
had
straight
food,
to the
they
soup
were,
kitchen. Yeah.
yeah, they were struggling and they were like looking for a handout. So it was rough. And it's like, dude, I'm not gonna set up in the corral in the horse shit, right? To wait for some turkey to come in. Like that's just, I wasn't doing it. I didn't
I would have.
Yeah, you sit in the flower bed, and the best turkey call on those particular days is a tin can full of corn.
They know. Go ahead, JJ. What do you? I know you got something.
Well, yeah. I said I probably would have messed to it. I would like set up a blind and just sit there. I mean, but the coolest thing about turkey hunting is like they don't smell, right? So you can sit in a blind and. Within a bunch of horse crap, like you just said,
right.
Or you can sit in a blind. I smoke cigars in the blind because they can't smell, right? So I'll sit there from like 6:30 in the morning till 11:30, just drinking Cokes and smoking cigars and just waiting on them, you know?
Oh my God.
So
that's
what
that,
I'll do,
Brad?
In some situations.
Can you imagine that in
you talked about bad weather. Like
yeah.
In bad weather, I would set up a blind and just sit there in the rain in
right.
the blind.
Yeah,
or if it's snowy, sometimes it's really snowy, I just don't even hunt. It's like
right, correct.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. You got to pick your battles.
That's why you want to get as many tags as possible. If you're in a state where you can
tie a few of those things together, JJ. When you're in a blind, it's a great strategy for when birds are unpredictable, but you've seen them feed in a spot consistently. And then again, bringing back in the calls. What is that comfort call? What does a turkey sound like when they're found some food on a cold day? Because they're going to communicate with the others. But what does that actually sound like? It's not like a breeding call where they're actively looking for a gobbler to respond or do something. But, you know, those little nuances are important. And sitting in your blind and maybe squeaking on your cigar is the trick. But there's got to be some contented feeding calls that can finish things up pretty nicely.
Yeah, you know, definitely. I've been practicing a lot of just clucks. You know, and also purrs. I love purring on calls.
Well, that's a real
the most important thing though on calls is like knowing when to shut up. Like if you see the turkey, don't call anymore. And, or if you hear them, you know, they gobble and they're like, oh my God, that's pretty close. I can't see them, but I can tell that's close. Don't call anymore.
When you hear, when you can feel that go up your neck, you just want to sit there and not move, right?
If you hear a spitting drum, definitely don't call. All of us are probably half deaf because of all the shooting we've done in our lifetime. But say if you hear a spitting drum, then it is like right behind you.
Well, first of all, if you are lucky enough to hear that close is pretty cool. You know what I mean? Because that doesn't happen all the time, because I can say that it's only happened to me a few times. And the times that it did, he came from behind us. Like he gobbled off on our right somewhere or our left, right? It's happened. And it's like, he's right there. And then everybody's like, okay, we're all ready. And then all of a sudden it goes dead. And you're like, you don't want to move. You don't want to talk. You don't want to do anything. So you're there for like a couple of minutes and you're like, and then all of a sudden, then you can just feel it. You're like, oh my God, he's right there. So it's like, now you're like, so, you know, that has definitely happened. And that is when that happens, that is a cool thing. A not cool thing is, you know, this happened to us in Montana. We were walking through the woods, heard something, got down, didn't even have a chance to put out decoys because we were side-hilling this mountain. And we stopped, we sat down. And by the time we sat down and everybody didn't even get settled, hen came over the hill and saw us. And then when they make that sound and you're busted, like I can tell you, I know exactly what that sounds like, because it's like the gig is up and you are done, right? And it's just like, you just like want to put your head in you're just like, that is a distinct sound. Yeah. Yeah. Everybody's so, heard it.
So yeah. that's the putt. And and I talked earlier about the cluck. Now the cluck and the putt are pretty much the same call. It's just the putt is a lot louder and a lot more, you know, alarming. Hysteric.
Yeah. Well, it's intense and it's quicker, right?
Yeah. So you gotta be careful. Like,
yeah. It's just
you don't want to bust yourself by putting.
Well, it's just like a hen mallard getting out of there, and it's like that alarm quack, right? It's kind of like the alarm putt, let's call it, right?
Yeah.
You're done. Like, and you might as well just leave the whole property because she just told everybody, like, it's over.
Yeah.
It's over.
There's a good point or a good lesson in all that, too, is calling is very effective, and so are decoys. So if you know turkeys are close, biggest mistake we make is I need to get 50 yards further before I set up the decoy. No,
right.
If you're visible, set up where you got good height. Forget about where the best place is for the decoy. Stay hidden. Be confident in your decoys and your calling, and they'll come to you.
Well, and guaranteed, if you push that further, Brad, they're going to see you. Like, you're going to say, I need to get the decoy visible. Well, you're going to be visible because then they're going to see you.
Right.
So you're going to bust. You're going to break it up. If they were that close, like if they're that close, like if I can't put the decoy, you know, within an arm's length or something, or just to put it out wherever, then, you know, if I can't go 5 feet, put it out and then sit in a tree or in a bush, like I'm not doing it because yeah, at that point, like he's on you at that point.
Yeah. And I think I've heard more putts because I tried to gain a little bit more ground. You hear what you think is a distant turkey and you think you got, you know, 3 minutes to get ready. No, you don't. You heard them. You better set up or be set up and be ready because they can show up in seconds. And we normally cause the putt.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt we caused the putt. Like that's the whole reason that even exists is for us.
So, you know, when I'm turkey hunting, what I do is I'm actually scanning the woods. I'm like, okay, there's a good spot to call from because there's a big tree I can get under. I've got some cover. You know, I can stick a decoy out within seconds instead of like I've seen people walk out into a field standing 30 yards out in an open field and start calling. Well, man, you're looking to get busted. A turkey can see you from half a mile away there.
For sure. Yeah. And
if you also hear a turkey that's gobbling and hot, you know, you have to assume that there's a silent satellite gobbler in the area as well. And you don't know where that one is and where if that's going to see you, you know.
Yeah.
You have to assume that.
Right. Is he half the distance? You know, is he closer? Like, where's he opposed to the other one? Now, I mean, I won't lie. I have crawled, you know, on my stomach to get a decoy out at the corner of a field, you know, 10 yards off so they could see it. But the grass was, you know, high enough. So I could do that and get away with it, but I was pushing it, and we were, I'll never forget the scenario. We were up on a hill. We could see them. They were down, up, and then down a little hole. So when they had come, they had gone in the hole, and I freaking just crawled as fast as I could out, put a decoy and ran back, you know, crawled back on my stomach because I knew they were in that hole. So I took a chance there. It paid off, but you know, if it was flat, I would have never done that. I would have just stayed in the woods where we were and just kept calling a little bit and drew them in. So, you know, but, and to your point, Brad, like when you're talking about a place to call from, you hear that turkey not so far away. Like the first thing I'm thinking is not pushing ahead. The first thing I'm thinking is where can I get where I can sit? And then where's my lanes to shoot? Because if I'm in something super thick and he comes in, I got no lanes, right? So where can I sit down and not even necessarily put a decoy out, but where do I at least have a lane to shoot, right?
Yeah, you want to be able to see them at 30 yards. Like, you know, if you leave yourself tight where he has to be within 10, that's really getting risky.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're risking everything. Well, also, you know, if you have really tight patterns and, you know, really tight modern ammo, you can, a lot of turkeys get missed close at 10 yards or, you know,
that's because you're throwing a ball at them.
Yeah, exactly.
You're rifling
them. I think they get missed more often close range than they do long range.
I think you're 100% right. So then let's go, you know, this is your side and your expertise. So let's go into that, you know, ammo side and that, because I mean, turkey ammo has come, you know, waterfowl ammo has come a long way, but turkey ammo is just like, I don't know how it can get any better. You know, like the ballistics and what you say you can kill a turkey at, you know, if you know how to, you know, shoot really well. Like, I know Brad shoots waterfowl. Like I don't, like when Brad says I'm going to poke this snow goose at 80, right? and he's shooting like, you know, like Black Cloud, or he's shooting like TSS or something. Like, I just do one of these, JJ. Yeah, let's see this. And I know it's going to get rocked, right? Because I know, like, Brad takes some of those shots. I'm not comfortable taking those shots because I don't shoot that enough, and I'm not that skilled on that long range. But Brad knows what he's doing, right? But I think, like, on the turkey side, like, it's come such a long way. Like, I don't know how you can just, I mean, you can't kill them more dead with the stuff that's out there. It's pretty potent.
Yeah, just to comment on Brad, he and I have waterfowl hunted quite a bit. He waits until I am done with all my shots, and then he starts shooting and just cleans everything up. I mean, he is you're awesome, Brad. You're awesome.
But Brad knows. Listen, but the thing about waterfowl, which isn't in turkey, is Brad knows his. He knows his lead right at that range, and that's really what. He knows the gun and the choke, right? And the ammo, right? No problem, right? But it is the lead at that high that he has dialed in, which you don't know that, like, you're out of the game. Doesn't matter what the shells can do or anything else. So, and obviously you don't have to lead a turkey, but like you said, you need to put it, you need to have some good placement.
Yeah, not only that, but your lead isn't important, but knowing your pattern is. So if you've practiced only at 20 yards, you don't have a clue what that gun's going to do at 10 yards if a bird comes in close, or at 30 or 45. And what is your maximum? Where does your shotgun, your choke, your ammunition start to blow out a pattern, or you lose effectiveness, so that you know what your limitation is in terms of range?
For sure. For sure. Yeah. So, and JJ, why don't you walk through maybe a couple, you know, of the stuff that you guys have. I mean, you have everything, so maybe give us a rundown of what guys can look for. And gals. So,
I mean, I could do a whole hour podcast on just this.
Well, but, I know that.
But basically, how it boils down to is what I was saying with Brad is he's an awesome wing shooter. I'm not an awesome wing shooter. That's one of the reasons why I like turkey hunting so much, is because it's a stationary target in most cases. And, you know, in my personal opinion, if you don't have a shotgun that has a solid sight system for turkeys, mainly red dots right now, you are going to have a very difficult time shooting a longer range turkey with an open sight bead, especially a gold bead shotgun or something like that. So, you know, I am a very strong supporter of turkey configuration shotguns, like, that are actually designed and made for turkey gun. And most of those will all have some sort of rifle type sight system, or, you know, drilled and tapped, or have a base for, you know, a sight or red dot scope. In some cases, kind of turkey scopes were kind of a little bit popular about maybe 15 years ago. And now it's got kind of the red dot rage.
Right.
But, you know, you'll have a, when 25 yards was the actual kind of patterning distance that was very solid in the 80s and even into the 90s. Nowadays it's 40. Like, everyone says you've got a pattern at 40. Personally, I'd rather kill a turkey at 25 yards than 40, because I like to call them in, and like a lot of people do, and see them and all that.
I want to see the show.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to watch the show. I want to watch it for a couple minutes. I want to watch him get on the merry-go-round and go around the Jake and around the Jake. And then about maybe the fourth spin, I just want to take his head off. So I want to watch it.
Well, but if they don't come in, I don't want to miss the opportunity either. So I want to shoot it at 40 yards. I want to shoot at 50 yards. Whatever that may be. So I want to have the best of both worlds in that case. But I do, to Brad's point, I do shoot at 25 yards to see where that pattern is. And typically that pattern is going to be me aiming at the wattles, you know, where those right where the skin meets the feathers down lower the neck. That's usually my aiming point. But if I have to shoot a turkey at 50 yards, then I know what my pattern is. And now I'm aiming my red dot at the eyeball or even the top of the head. So, you know, you do need to know your aiming points. And with the speed of some of these loads, you know, going pretty fast or going slow based on, you know, your payloads, you need to know that. So that's the most important thing. Other than that, you know, we can talk about lead loads and bismuth loads and tungsten. But everyone, it seems like the rage is TSS.
For sure.
You know, I personally like to shoot lead. I've shot several birds with number fours. I still like that because that's what I look, you know, fours or fives is what I learned to shoot with. So right. that's great. But if you have it and you can afford it and you want to use it, obviously TSS will really up your game as far as the number of pellet count that you have in that load.
Right.
It provides some diversity for sub gauges too. I mean, that's become very popular with turkeys. Yes. Part of it's a challenge. Part of it's using a sentimental gun or something new. But, you know, 410s, 28s, 20 gauge, 16, it's all very popular amongst waterfowl and upland and turkey hunters. So it diversifies it. But, I mean, JJ, your ammunition goes well beyond that. You know, small frame shooters or people that are afraid of recoil, you have low recoil ammunition too, and it kills turkeys.
Yep. I'm not afraid of recoil, but I don't like it. So why would I do it? Actually, my favorite load right now is the 12 gauge reduced recoil 2¾-inch heavy shot TSS. It is, or the custom shop recoil, federal custom shop.
If you get into the custom shop, forget it. You know,
but you don't need the, in my personal opinion, you don't need a big 3.5-inch load. You don't even need a 3-inch load. A 2¾-inch load shooting TSS number nines has lots of pellets in it.
Yeah.
It's very similar to shooting a 20 gauge or even a 28 gauge. Because it's all about the ounces of payload in that hull. So, you know, I'm really excited to try to hunt with the 28 gauge this year. It's not legal in all states, so I can't use it in Illinois currently. But there's other states where I can try it. So 28 gauge, I think is going to be the next trend. 410 became the trend. I don't know, 5 years ago, But I think 28 gauge is going to follow suit.
Yeah. Well, and go ahead, Brad.
You just need to look at recoil as an extra heartbeat with all the excitement.
Yes. A recoil is fine during the hunt, but it's not fine when you're patterning. That is for sure.
The other thing, you know, like you were talking about, like the 28's not allowed in Illinois or whatever, but you also need to double check your shot sizes too in certain states to make sure you're legal, you know, shooting the correct thing as well. Cause some states, you know, you gotta shoot 4 and above or, you know, whatever. So you gotta check that. And yeah, like you said, we could talk about TSS and third degree and grand slam. Like we could talk about everything federal has, everything that heavy shot has. Like we could be here for hours for sure. The only thing to do is find something that fits or you think fits in, or grab a couple boxes, go pattern for sure, like Brad said, and don't just pattern at, you know, 25. Like you should, you know, maybe do 20, 30, 40, 50. What do I know? You know what I mean? Figure out what you're going to do. And then you need to know what it can do. If you're hung up at 40, you know what I mean? Where do you aim? So you need to be ready for anything, but you know, maybe I'm going to start patterning at 10, you know what I mean? Cause I want to shoot them close.
Yeah. And then I would tell people to shoot from the positions that you're going to find yourself in the field. If you're sitting all the time, if you're in a chair in a blind, shoot from a chair. You know, you mount your shotgun different. And that's one of the advantages of a red dot, is it helps ensure that you're lined up on a target. But sitting under a tree, sitting in a chair, sometimes laying prone and sneaking them, or having them come to you in the grass, like, you never know what situation you're going to come into. You need to practice that to see if you can mount your gun, hold it properly, and not give yourself a nick in the nose with your shotgun when the recoil comes.
For sure. Like, we just... Go ahead, JJ.
I was going to say, beyond that, you should just practice regardless. I mean, I think you should get a 25-round box of target loads and just, you know, don't worry about the pattern so much and worry about the... you know, the distance so much, but just practice
shooting.
Actually, you know, you can do a little jogging, or, you know, do 10 push-ups and then get up and shoot. Like, you need to practice when you're kind of winded or when you're tired. You need to practice on your target acquisition and getting that red dot on that redhead. And just shooting targets with target loads at 25 yards in various situations is going to really up your game. Because you've practiced those shots.
Bigger time.
Yes.
Well, you know, maybe you should run around a little bit and then get your heart rate up, because when old Tommy Two Toes comes in and you're freaking like shaking, you're like, maybe you want your heart rate up. You know what I mean? I'm serious.
Exactly. That's what I wrote an article about that. It said, like, practice makes perfect. Like, go out and, you know, do a 50-yard dash and come back and shoot, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that makes total sense, because usually your heart rate's up a little bit. You're not just all like, oh, I'm going to sit down and shoot this. You know, if you're with somebody else, or you're by yourself, or you did a bunch of work and, you know, like, you chased them, and you're at a high level. There's no doubt.
Practice with your mask on, practice with your gloves on, practice with your vest on. Like, you know, you kind of need to be in those situations, because that's exactly what you're going to be in when you're turkey hunting.
For sure. For sure.
Practice putting your cigar down.
Or leaving it in your mouth while you smoke them. Right? Just go from this side over to this side so you can get the gun up. And you got the old Stogan coming out the left there.
Exactly.
I want to see that. I want to see that, actually.
All right, I'll practice it later.
Yeah, let me send me a picture of that. I want to see that. So, Brad, Kyle at Weatherby, like, I just got the new Sorek shotgun that they just launched, and it's already drilled already. So he already put some loophole Delta points on it. So that's what we're going to do this year. Like, so pretty excited about that. Cause I think that's going to be, like, honestly, that's going to be like my first really dialed in turkey shotgun, because I've always just taken the old, you know, waterfowl shotgun with nothing on it. Right. And then so just
here's my eye roll for you.
Yeah. But oh, listen, God. like I'm just used to just laying them down. So however you got to do it, you do it. So I'm not that like turkey, you know, connoisseur turkey, like, you know. So this year I will come to your side, JJ, and be a little more, maybe civilized is the word I'm looking for.
Congratulations, Mario. I'm surprised, disappointed, at the same time, but I'm happy for you.
Well, it was always a, you know, it's waterfowl first all the time. Like, you know me, like, that's it. Like, I don't, if it has antlers, if it's a deer, like, I don't really care, right? If it's whatever. The only thing I care about is if Brad shoots a moose and we're going to cook it. That's all I care about on something like that. And he doesn't even have to shoot a bull. He can shoot a cow, and I'm just happy.
Well, I shot a turkey last year with Brad, and Brad cooked it up. I mean, anything you shoot, Brad will cook up, and it'll be amazing.
For sure.
He made, sure. What did you make again? You made like this turkey salsa.
Turkey leg salsa, yep.
Oh, God, that was so good.
And nacho average turkey nuggets with nacho chips crushed up.
Oh, man, that was so good. Yeah. I never thought about putting meat in salsa, but Brad does. and I mean, why wouldn't you put it in there?
It was a big hit.
It was fantastic.
You know, and speaking of that, Brad, I don't know if we have any, you know, because now that we're in the turkey world, I'm going to have to go back and get a bunch of turkey like recipes from you, because right now, like, the FA website is just littered with, you know, like, what do you want to make, like, duck tacos and goose bread, and you know what I mean, but I don't have, I gotta come back and get turkey recipes. So now folks that buy a decoy and whatever else can go smoke a turkey and then cook it, smoke them, then smoke them again. So yeah, we're gonna have to do that. Is there,
Brad's got a lot of turkey recipes that are for awesome.
For sure. So we're on the FA podcast. We got JJ Reich from Federal Red Fence and Outdoor Writer. So we're just talking turkey and going through, you know, what can help you in a turkey hunt, what to do before, what to do. Maybe let's go into that. What to do during the hunt. Like, maybe what's some, you know, tips, do's or don'ts for, you know, when, I know we talked about, you know, don't run into an open field to, you know, to pull your binoculars out or set a decoy out. Like, maybe let's go through a couple other maybe do's and don'ts if you guys have something that might help somebody, you know, in the woods or when they're out this year. Maybe Brad, you could, the first thing I'll say is try to be quiet, but that's, you know, that it is what it is. What about, go ahead, Brad, you could start wherever.
I'd say patience. It's when you get pushing things too hard is when you make mistakes. So be patient. And, you know, I've had scenarios where I've seen birds in a field and they were close to a property line where I couldn't hunt. So instead of pushing them, I waited and hunted them the next day and they were right back in the same spot. So yep. Patience paid off. You don't always have 2 days, but a lot of your scouting intel on the birds is important. Just patience is always key. It's when you get overly aggressive that you'll make mistakes and you'll hear that dreaded putt.
Well, or you'll bump them, you know, like you said, I've had the same thing where it was like they were on the neighbor's property, couldn't go that route. I didn't want to go to the fence line because I figured I'd push them more. So we waited, we called a little bit, they got fired up, they came over, you know, done deal. So 100% patience is a huge, huge thing. And I think if you just get trouncing through the woods and get hot on them so much, you just keep bumping and they just keep going. You know what I mean? Because you're in that mode. Now, if you're trying to get ahead, that's a different story. You got to loop around or do whatever. But I think if you're just heading them, try to head right at them, you're just bumping. Go ahead, JJ. What?
Yeah, no, I need to echo what Brad said because he knows what he's talking about. But the thing is that I have had turkeys fly down, walk away, and I just stayed there. And they actually did circle back and come back. You know, it was 45 minutes later or whatever, but you know, I still got it. And I still kind of count that as a off the roost kind of hunt. But I was patient about it. I also would suggest like not being a purist about it, everything. You know, there's some people that say, oh, you know, I need, the only way to hunt a turkey is to call it off the roost, or to, you know, run and gun, and they don't want to be in a blind. And so there's a lot of chatter about people, again, kind of being purist about the right way to shoot a turkey or don't shoot it if it doesn't come to the decoys. You know, you need to, your whole job is to call to the decoys. So if it's not coming to the decoys, that's an unsuccessful hunt and you shouldn't shoot it. Like, I've heard people say that kind of stuff. And I think all that is just a bunch of crap. Like, you should hunt turkeys in every single strategy way you can. Like, if the situation calls for you need to sit there all day, then sit there all day. The situation calls where, you know, you're not getting any opportunities to have them fly down from the roost, then, you know, don't worry about it. Go in the afternoon and try to get them when they're coming back to the roost or whatnot. Right. Like, agreed. You need to try everything possible. And there's no shame in shooting a turkey in a way that's different than how your dad taught you or how videos taught you, whatever. Just go out there and get after it in every way possible.
Set your own objectives. You don't have to do it because somebody else called it with a certain call or over a certain decoy or off the roost. Set your own objectives. You might get to the point where that's what you need to be rewarded for all the effort you put in. But I'm like JJ, I like to eat turkey. I like to shoot turkey. I like to be successful. there's lots of different ways to be successful, and I don't limit myself by creating limitations on my own opportunities.
Yeah.
For sure.
Like, I was in one situation where I was with it was a guide, I believe, and we set up our decoys, we were waiting, and the turkeys didn't come, and they came around a point, and I said, well, let's just crawl through this point and pop up on them and get them that way. And he said, well, that's not how we do it. We want to like call them into the decoys. I'm like, no, we
That's
tried
how
that.
I do it.
It didn't work. So now we're going to crawl over there and we're going to, obviously we're going to be safe about it and everything else. We're on private land and all that other stuff. But we crawled up on those guys and we got and filled the tag. So, I mean, that was ecstatic. But yeah, you can't be stuck in one way to do it.
Well, I mean, it's happened where, like that scenario that I talked about. I remember Bill, who used to work at Gerber, Brad. Remember him? I don't know if you remember Bill, little short guy. So Bill had never been turkey hunting. So we go down Southern Oregon and we roost them. And the next morning we set up exactly which way they're gonna come out. I'm about 100 yards from the roost. I think I'm more than enough. We don't go in with headlamps. We do everything right. We are in the brush right on the edge. They can't see us. We just about basically belly crawled. Light comes. They start pitching down. They pitch the other way, and everybody goes the other way. And we're like every day they've been coming out this way, and today they're going the other way. Now, whether they heard us, saw us, if it wasn't us, they just decided. So we hunted another spot, and then I said, I'm hoping tonight they're not coming up the same way they went out. So we set up way 100 yards up the other way, and we ended up shooting one on the way back, because they got us in the morning, but we got them in the afternoon. So be it. You know what I mean? It's like pay attention to your surroundings and, make some lemonade. So that's what we did. So.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, you really have to be observant. I was in one situation hunting with a friend, and really early, one gobbler pitched down, and then it didn't really do anything. It was just we even forgot about it.
Right.
And then all the other gobblers, they pitched down and went the other direction, and we thought the hunt was over. And my friend, actually, it was Philip Vanderpool, who was a fantastic, he's a big, fantastic hunter TV guy. Used to work at Hunter Specialty. He's like, oh, remember that one turkey that pitched down and is still like around here? I don't think that turkey left with the rest of the crowd.
Right.
And he might come back. And so I was like, all the turkeys are gone. Let's pick up and leave. And he said, no, we don't know that where that one was, that first one that, we saw an
Right.
hour ago. It could still be around. So we sat there and called, and that sure enough, that turkey came in and I shot it. It was like, yeah, you and that's being observant and knowing your surroundings. He was very good at that. I was not, but I learned a lesson that day, and I'll keep that forever.
Probably the lesson that I have gotten a couple times, and it goes back to Brad's, like, and both of you guys talking about patience, but I've been on hunts where I'm like, like I remember specifically we had birds out at like 80 yards, and we were behind this bush. I had the decoy out in front of us and we were good, and they were hung up at 80. And I'm thinking to myself, man, they just won't come. I would call, and they would both, there was two toms, they would both fire off, but then they wouldn't make a move. And I'm like, we're just at a stalemate. So I just stopped calling. I sat down. I said, we're gonna sit here. I looked at my watch. I said, we're gonna sit here for 10 minutes. I'm not gonna say a word and see what they do. And sure as shit, right? I'm sitting there. Like, I look at my watch, 10 minutes is up. And I just think I and I'm hunting with Bill again from Gerber. This is a long time ago. And I go to get up. I just go to move like this, and I just hear you just hear the stuff you always don't want to hear. Bill goes, don't move. And I'm like, oh my God, really? They went over this little, they side-hilled this little, I wouldn't even call it a hill, but they sidewalked it, they came down, and they came right behind on the side of us up from the back. And I was like, holy shnikes. So I didn't move. They didn't bust me. They walked out at like 15 yards, and I just like Bill was in some weird position to shoot. So he's like shooting through the bush. And I said, just shoot the first one that you can see. And I said, I'm going to shoot the other one, whether he's running or not. And he just wailed the first one. And I literally, as soon as he shot, I was in such a weird position because I didn't move, but I jumped up and I slung a little bit at that one running. And I was like, and I clipped him and rolled him, you know, ass over tea kettle, and he's rolling. And so it was chaos, but like, if I would have just waited a couple more minutes, then we both would have had, you know, good shots and we both would have been ready. But I was like, there's no way they're going to come all the way around. And guess what? They came all the way around. So what are you going to do?
Like Brad said at the beginning of the podcast, like, turkeys are turkeys. You have no idea what they're going to do. Like, you could be hunting them for years or decades and still,
yeah,
no idea what they're going to do.
Well, the cool thing that I could say that with that, and not really, I didn't want to, like, this isn't like a push product or whatever, but we did use the silhouettes last year on all the hunts. So the turkey silhouettes, and the thing that I noticed on the turkey silhouettes, the birds didn't have any issues coming into them. I was really more observing, you know, we shot a couple turkeys, no doubt, but I wanted to observe, like, what's their, you know, what did they think? Like, what were they looking at? What were they doing? You know, and we had a decent hunt in Washington, and, you know, I had a Jake this way and then a hen turned this way. Like, I turned them all different ways. And you could see when that Tom came in, like, he would come in and he would see this one and then he'd lose that one, right? Because it was straight at him or whatever. And then he'd come around, he'd lose this one, and then he'd see that one. So I think it almost, man, I think it almost made him like, what the hell's going on kind of look. And then it was like an antelope, Brad, that comes out to the orange flag, right? Wants to come see what it is. Like, the curiosity, like, brought him all the way in, and he didn't know what was going on. And by that time it was a done deal, because I've seen a couple posts where, like, you know, we put up the decoys and people are like, does it really work? And, you know, I'm not going to say it works 100% of the time, but we saw some pretty cool stuff with it last year. We had a hen come in and like dust herself in the middle of the silhouettes for like 15 minutes, which was like the coolest thing. Like, I've never seen it that long. Like, she came in and was just dusting and flapping and dusting and flapping. Then she'd shake off and she was bugging a little bit, and then she'd come back and dust again. Like, I don't know. It was pretty cool to see, like, just how relaxed they were and whatever. So I don't know, just, and like, I just wanted to try something different other than, like, you know, the full bodies and everything else out there. I know those work. That's no problem. So just something cool, I guess, to try. I don't know. It was,
well,
pretty cool.
I have a pack of them and I'm going to definitely give it a try. I think it's very cool. I mean, obviously silhouettes have been very popular for snow geese and other waterfowl, but yeah, I'm definitely excited. I think it's going to be a lot easier to carry them in, that's for sure.
Well, and that was the cool thing. It was run and gun. I just used a little carabiner and I just clipped them on my vest. I coated it with rubber so it wasn't like clanking, right? So I didn't have any noise. And I would just clip it on my vest and just go. And I mean, when we were in Montana, holy crap, we walked like 15 miles. It was pretty rough. Like, we took it on the chin for real there. It was rough with the snow and the wind and everything else going on. So, and there was, and honestly, we had hunted one property where, betcha, I found two or three like turkey carcasses. There was either a bobcat or a mountain lion or something that was absolutely like waging war on the turkeys. Like, he was busy. So, that was a whole section where they weren't gobbling and they weren't doing anything, because I think they were just afraid of their lives on that mountain for sure. It was a whole different thing that I've heard about, but I've never seen it.
Yeah, I've heard about that happening in coyote country when there's a ton of coyotes around. That's why turkeys will fly down and shut up, because there's,
yes.
And if that's the case, then start trapping around that area.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Brad, it's no different in like big game, where it's like, you know, you know, elk will stop bugling or whatever, they hear wolves or whatever, like they're shut down. Like it's not happening. They know better.
Yeah, so. Just so everyone knows, you can actually, where it's legal to shoot predators year round, shoot some coyote loads in your turkey camp.
That is true.
Like, well, listen, I'm not going to say I will ruin a turkey hunt with swatting a coyote that comes into the decoys or a bobcat, but don't put it past me because I am making that decision on the fly, and I know the turkeys will benefit from that. You know what I mean? So I'm probably okay with that.
Agreed.
Yeah. So the other thing I guess I would go into is, you know, something that you're talking about, Brad, and go on the conservation side and the predator side. You know, everybody's got to do their portion on the coyotes, on raccoons, anything else that you could think of in that area. If you have a crow season that goes later, you guys know how crazy I am about shooting those, but they destroy just as much, if not more, nests on every bird, songbirds, turkeys, waterfowl, like you name it. Like if you can shoot crows throughout the spring or however long you can shoot them, like you should be doing your part and just wearing them out just for that.
I would definitely agree with that. They're definitely raid and nest for sure.
Yeah. So you need to
skunks are also nest raiders too, but I mean, right. Possibly, I really do think that there's a push for people to do more predator hunting and do more trapping because of how you know, damaging they are to turkey populations.
Right.
Yeah, you know what? It's more time in the outdoors. The more time you spend out there, whether it's hunting crows, hunting coyotes, spotting turkeys, the more you become intimate with all of it. The better you know the prey, the predators, the ecosystem, the preferred habitats, you know, you learn so much about them just by being out there more. So that's why I try to spend as many days in the field as possible.
Buddy, agreed. And who knows that, like, you trimming some coyotes or, like you said, possums, raccoons, skunks, like whatever. Like, who says that once you trim a couple of those, your turkey numbers don't just, you know, explode, you know, because there has been a lot of people, you know, being at the NWTF show and talking to people and whatever, you know, everybody's numbers are down on turkeys. And what's going on? Is it, you know, nest raiders? Is it the habitat? Is it, you know, some dying off? Is it the weather? Like whatever they're coming up with, like, you know, you can only change so much, but I know we can change the predator side. So, I mean, that's just something that we should all take on us and do for sure.
You know? And support the conservation groups that are helping us, you know, help to establish turkey populations across North America, help to sustain them, help manage them, help recognize management issues, concerns. You know, there's lots of reasons why we should support conservation, but the biggest one is be greedy. We want more turkeys in our future.
For sure. Like, I mean, it's pretty cool, you know, if you can help and do that, you know, I'm all about it. I'm all about helping that. I enjoy that kind of stuff. The foxes, the coyotes, the anything you can get to. If you have an open season and it rolls, you know, go for it. The more days I can spend outside, the better mood I'm in. So I'm all about it. So, well, good. Well, I think we've covered a good amount of stuff. I think that's great. If you guys want more information, you know, we are in partners with federal, so you can, I mean, God, you can go to the website and just look what you want to get, want to pattern, want to try between that. You guys have heavy shot, like you guys have everything that can just smash a turkey. So it's pretty simple finding out, you know, what your preference is. There's enough there to pick. No matter what gun you're shooting, you guys got it. So, which is pretty cool. So I think that's a good thing. And then, you know, like Brad said, make sure you are 100% patterning and doing all that. I think that's probably the best thing you can do. You could probably pattern and then work on your calling if you're going to do that, because really, like, setting up decoys and just getting out a couple decoys, like, that's not, like, on the turkey side, I don't think it's you know, it's not rocket science on that stuff. So I think it's pretty simple. So
yeah,
anything to close, again, JJ?
I was just going to say, I think one theme of the podcast is practice, 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 practice on everything. Practice your calling, practice your shooting, you know, just get ready. And Brad, one last thing I have to mention is the whole, and you're a big proponent of this, but the whole tick thing and management of that, right? So you don't go out without any, you don't go out with clothes that aren't treated for ticks anymore, do you, Brad?
Absolutely not, because if there's a tick anywhere, it's going to find me. So, you know, tick-borne illnesses and disease are a real concern. So I know you introduced me to some people. Were they out of Wisconsin or Minnesota?
Yep. And then, and now you're, I can't even pronounce the word. What is it? Permethrin, whatever.
Permethrin, yeah.
Yes. You need to do that. But again, that goes to practice and preparation. Like you can't say, oh, I'm going turkey hunting tomorrow. What am I going to do about ticks? Like you need to prepare that a couple days ahead of time. So
absolutely.
That goes back to practice and preparation. So make sure if you don't have that kind of stuff for tick protection on your gear list, that you need to have that on there, especially this year. I mean, we in Minnesota, we've already found some ticks. You know, it is early March and the ticks are already out. So it's, I think it's going to be bad this year.
I'm not saying that a guy that made some clothes and sent you guys a couple sets of clothes, I'm not saying that those pants and shirts are not already treated with it's called Tanitex.
Okay.
So the clothes that you guys got from us that we just launched, pants and the shirt are both treated with that. And the fabric is like ran through that, so it's not sprayed on after, so it is in the fabric. So those are good for 100 washes, which is supposed to be, from what I can see on the market, that's the longest on the market right now. So
that's fantastic. I mean, that is really crucial and important. Yes. To be wearing clothes that have that, either the manufacturer is supplying it like you are, or you know, you treat it yourself. So yeah.
And I would tell you that if you're really worried about it, then just, you know, you're going to end up spraying your boots and everything else. So, you know, if you spray more on the clothing, it's not going to matter. You know, it's going to help you in the long run. Like, you know, because when they're that thick and whatever, like, I'm not taking any chances. I don't, you know, like it could be, you know, it could be 30 degrees in Texas and I'm wearing snake boots because I don't care. Like I am doing what I do.
That's I really like the dance you do when a rattler actually sounds off.
Well, you saw me dance. I just scream like a third grade girl and run.
Yeah, he does too. Yeah.
Oh, I did that too. And then I got mad and then I took the shooting sticks and I was jamming it in the hole so I could see if I could just get him either pissed off to come out or I could kill him. I was mad as a top, bro.
I would have been a half mile away already. There's no way I'm going back.
That is, Brad knows that's my least favorite thing. I would rather fight a grizzly bear than a snake any day. So yeah. So I'm hoping for big stuff on the clothes just because it's treated and stuff like that. So I'm pretty excited about that. Brad was the first one to give me the permethrin speech before we went to Texas to shoot what do you call it? Foxes down there. We went to the ranch down there. So I was all about that. So yeah, do what you need to do and just be careful for sure. And me, it's a poison ivy, poison oak thing too. I'm always on the watch for that. Because I always get that in about a drop of a hat. So spring is a tough time for me.
You know, so delicate. You're just a delicate little flower.
You guys need to be more aware of your surroundings when you're out there. Forget about the snakes and all that, because they're really not going to hurt you. But pay attention to where there's wild asparagus and mushrooms to go with those turkeys.
Oh, yes. Yep. Gotcha. Find some black walnut trees.
There you go.
Back in the fall.
When do they drop, JJ, the black walnuts? Is it in the
fall? In our area around September. Yeah, I went and visited Brad. Was it last fall or is it 2 falls ago?
Two
And I
falls
didn't
ago,
bring
yeah.
any. And you, he was Mario. He was so mad at me. Like he was.
I almost had to cut him off Tim Hortons and pierogies.
Oh, for sure. Like
was
I get the pierogies. Like I get that. And the Tim
he.
Hortons, like I already import my own, bro. I'm not even hiding that.
Well,
Yeah,
Brad had like this list of recipes that he wanted to use Black Walnuts for, and he thought I was going to bring some, and I didn't. And it was like he was. Yeah, Brad doesn't get mad very often, but he was. I think he was.
Well,
Well,
you're
it
the
wasn't
Black
bad.
Walnut
Maybe he's just
guy.
a little choked. Yeah.
Why didn't you bring some? What were you doing, you selfish Black
Well,
Walnut?
I was. What were we doing? We're waterfowl hunting, right?
We were
So
doing a waterfowl hunt. Yeah.
I was so pumped about killing some big Canada geese that I was like, I wasn't thinking, wasn't thinking.
We had a good trip. Lots of geese, specks, honkers, some ducks.
Yeah,
Yeah.
sounds
And lots
terrible.
lots.
I had waterfowl in my mind. I didn't have black walnuts on my mind.
I
That was
got you.
what.
I got you.
The one thing in common with you two, even when you're not on the same hunt, is when you get in the waterfowl blind, there's usually a box of Tim Hortons donuts going up and down
Right.
the
And I'm the one lecturing people to exercise
line.
before they practice while I'm eating donuts.
Well, someone has to be considerate for the rest of the group and look out for everybody, right? We're like little
Right.
homemakers, that's all. We're just
Exactly.
thinking of others, you know. That's all. Well, good. All right, if you need anything, you go to the federal site and check out JJ's stuff and what they got. Make sure you pattern. Go there. You go to the Leupold stuff. We talked about the red dots or anything like that. Whether you need a range finder, binoculars, like anything to help your hunt in the spring go better. You can go to Brad's website. Is there anything you want to plug other than your Instagram and looking for you or just check his
Instagram and
recipe?
Facebook, but pay attention. There's lots of recipes. If you're looking for something new to encourage you to go shoot some more birds, there's never enough turkeys for the
For
pot.
sure. For sure. So
And
check all those out. We appreciate you guys coming on and talking turkey and going from there. Yeah, go
well,
ahead.
don't forget to check out the final approach turkey calls. You got
We
six new mouth calls are all good. You have the classic cuts, you have the split V, the ghost, the combo. You
I've
have
already
two nice
started.
double reads.
And I think my favorite so far is the V cut right now. Because I think I sound as close to that like nasty, raspy hen that I was talking about. I think that's the cut for me that so far, like the two easy doubles, like the real easy ones to blow, like that's my, if I depending on where I put it in my mouth, that's like my young hen, so but the V cut so far is, I think that's the one that's gonna be right there for me.
Yeah, the double read calls in general are underrated. I mean, your two double read calls are hot. I mean, those are, in the words of my 17-year-old son, with those are fire, right?
Oh, not
So,
fire.
like the double reads are fire, but everybody wants some sort of fancy cut, which is fine, but don't rule out the double read.
Well, and I always say that, especially if you're just starting with a mouth call and you've never done it or whatever, those are going to be the easiest ones. Like it's just like a duck call. Like you want a double read, you want something easy to blow. Like that's going to be your go-to, And pick up a slate call if you want to try something. We have a glass and a slate. Like, there's so many calls out there. Just pick something up that you want to learn and you want to use, and then just practice. Like we That is the huge word for this whole thing, is definitely practice. So you just got to figure out what to
Do
do.
you have a podcast on just your new turkey products?
No, I'm going to be doing that as well. So I'm going to run through it. That's why I didn't want to just like overload us with that.
Yeah,
So I'll
okay,
definitely be doing
I'll shut up now, but that vest is amazing. So you
that.
need to do
The
a
video is
podcast.
up about the vest and the cool thing about it and how the seat goes up. If you are looking for a new vest, please go look at that. People were like stunned coming by the booth and saying, like, how come nobody's come up with this before? Like, this is such a cool design. Like, you don't have to battle you don't have to battle the magnets or the clips or the so the response has been really good, even though we're just getting into the turkey side. Like, everybody's kind of jacked. So it's been, It's been really good. I'm pretty excited about that. Like, you couldn't ask for much more than people just getting excited about getting in the woods. And when you make something like that, like, people get all jacked up. Like, I live on the waterfowl side, like, die hard. And when somebody says, "Oh, I use this and it helped us, and I'm so excited about it," I get jacked. But now on the turkey side, that's blown me away that people are so jacked about that. So I'm pretty, it's pretty humbling, but pretty cool in the sense that, everybody came together in the office to make that happen. So it's pretty cool when you come up with something like that people are jacked
Agreed.
about. Yeah. So I'm pumped. And I mean, listen, when guys have been hunting, guys came in, a couple of the guys from Woodhaven came over to just like chit chat and BS. And, Duke was one of the guys' name. He came over. I don't know how long he's been killing turkeys, but he's got bodies on him, Brad. Like, he's got bodies, right? And he was like, "That turkey vest is badass." Like that is, when you get a guy like that who's been killing turkeys like his whole life, and then he comes over and sees that, and he's all jacked up, and he's like, JJ at Christmas with black walnuts and a crusher or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, he was over the moon. So I see something like that, like, my mind is blown right there. So yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Mario. I really appreciate it. This was a lot of fun. I love hanging out with you guys, and very cool.
Well, we can do it more. So we'll definitely do that. Listen, thanks for everybody for jumping on. I hope people get something out of this and they could go check out whatever they need on social media stuff. Hit up Federal, hit up all the guys, look for Brad's recipes in every magazine, every online, just search his name and you'll find something to cook. Like, I don't know, just use one of the recipes on a raccoon. I guarantee it'll taste good. So if you
It's
need
true.
us, hit up the social media sites for FA, for Final Approach. And then the YouTube series is up. We just started the new web series, which is basically aimed at the turkey side, which is called The Last Strut. So we have The Last Pass on the waterfowl side. Now we have The Last Strut. So we're gonna grow that and just get going on that. So we're pumped too on all this stuff. So it's all good stuff. It's fun. So that's what we do. So all right, listen, thanks guys for everything. Appreciate the time. I know I kept you a little longer, but I appreciate it. It was all good stuff, and I'm sure we'll talk super soon here on whatever. So
Sounds
all right.
good. See you guys.
Yeah.
All
See you,
right.
Brad.
Love you guys. Thanks. Appreciate
Yep.
it.